Well, joining us once again for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Jan.
How are you?
Well, the sun's shining here.
All right, okay.
As they would say in Melbourne for the moment.
Four seasons in one day. Four seasons in one day. Lots to run through, KB, this week. Let's start with Leeds United, as we always do. And, of course, it's only been a week or so since Adam Pearson left, and already we're hearing things from Massimo Cellino. And this time he's accusing Sam Byram of thinking the Elland Road club is not big enough for him because the 22-year-old refused to sign a new contract. So already since Pearson's gone, we're now starting to hear from Massimo Cellino again, and probably not the things we want to be hearing.
Well, I don't think Sam Byram said very much, has he?
No, Sam Byram hasn't said anything publicly, but Massimo Cellino has said that Sam didn't sign a new contract. He won't sign it anymore. He's been offered a contract a few times. I'm deeply offended. He thinks he deserves to be in a bigger team and a bigger club, and maybe he's right.
Well, I think it's unfortunate Massimo said that, because firstly, if you're trying to persuade somebody to do something, you don't slag them off, do you? Hardly an encouragement to do what you want them to do anyway. But so Byram shouldn't have been left to this stage in his career anyway. Because he's on a 3-year contract, so the moment they saw how good he was, they should have tried to snap him up earlier. But now he's obviously played that many more games, higher profile, on the radar list of a number of clubs, no doubt some of whom have probably made an approach one way or the other to his agent. Maybe we'll never know if that's true or not. So now you've got a situation where there's only 6 months left, and there'll be a free agent walk away. So they walk away, Leeds will get some compensation because he's under the age of 25. But I just think it's silly. I think some things should stay in the dressing room and boardroom and not go out to the public. But there's plenty of other things that Massimo could tell us, could tell the supporters, which isn't commenting on, and which he should do. Because to get the fans really behind him, now his honeymoon period's over, he's got to take them into his confidence and tell him what he's doing. At least that's my opinion. The loss of Pearson, Adam Pearson, I think, has caused consternation and amazement in certain areas. Nobody believes the story about he taking up his business personal interest, but he can come back any time he likes. Well, meanwhile, who's going to do the work? And the feedback I got by third parties, because people always talk to him, is in fact under Pearson, the staff felt comfortable because they had somebody who could make a decision and support them. Whereas Massimo is somewhat uncertain. I'll give you a small example. There are 4 outstanding court cases at the moment. Massimo has changed his solicitor so many times that some of the people who handle the case don't know who they're getting orders from, what to do. And there have been cases, as I've said before, whereby he's dithering and going back and reneging on his agreements. He has cost himself more money and created bad feeling, which he shouldn't have done and didn't need to have done. And there's one small example. We have the case against West Ham in Jersey. That's been won. The only question now is assessing the costs due to Leeds, which is estimated somewhere between £300,000 and £700,000. All the lawyer needs is an instruction, put the papers in. You didn't get them? You wonder why experienced firm of lawyers, if they are indeed experienced, can't give him that simple instruction. Create money for all weather, as far as Leeds concerned. You've got the Enterprise Insurance case outstanding. You've got the Macron case outstanding. And you have the Western case outstanding. and all that's happening is racking up bills, which we have to pay him eventually. In one particular case, so far, he hasn't even put an appearance. It's ridiculous. And those things need to be wiped out, cleared off the table, so that Leeds can then go forward. In passing, I did hear some comment about his next priority is to buy back Thorpe Arch. Well, the Leeds City Council are blamed for that. They agreed, God, where are we going back now? 2008, somewhere around there, the council agreed to assist us to buy the ground by giving us a mortgage, on which we'll pay interest, of course, obviously, and security generally. They all agreed up to the last minute. They decided to introduce an outside lawyer. He went back to square one and started answering the questions that had been asked 3 months before. When Levy and Morris and the others sold Thorpe Arch to get rid of their own personal guarantees, they got it's a 25-year lease. It's either 5 or 7, I can't remember now, 5 or 7-year option to buy the ground at a fixed price. Now, it's the deadline. And the deadline was Sunday at 6 o'clock. At 4 o'clock on the Friday, some council idiot said, well, we can't get this done in time. Can't we get an extension of the deadline? Which shows how unworldly these people were. Because, I can't remember his name now, the guy at Manchester, the owner, he'd done quite such a good deal. The rent was very high and rising 3% per annum. So I think by now it must be $600,000 or $700,000 a year, at least. We could have bought it for £4.5 million. But we didn't. So that the problem Massimo's got now is if he wants to buy the ground, the training ground, he's then got to go cap in hand to the guy in Manchester, Jewish guy in Manchester, and ask for a price, because the other one's finished. And that means that I've met the man, he's tough, hard, but very shrewd, but also fair. But obviously you try and drive as hard a bargain as you can. And that could have been in our hands a long time ago. So I wish Massimo well on that bit, but it ain't looking too good. Because it'd be a price much more, I suspect. Otherwise, all you've got to do is sit on the lease for the balance of the 25 years, and every year, taking 3% increase in rent, which comes out of season ticket sales, which could go on players.
Some interesting times, KB, at Elland Road, and also very interesting times at another of your former clubs in Chelsea. A horrendous start to the season for them in the Premier League. But then off the field, they're having a fair few problems as well, on and off the field. I mean, problems with Diego Costa, and now, of course, with this Dr. Eva Canaro.
Well, I think that the problem is that the situation is these problems are self-inflicted. Although Chelsea has a proper management structure, including a board of directors with the chairman. They never say anything. And this, I think, is because of their background. I remember soon after they took over, I referred some problems to, press problems, to a certain member of the board, and he said, forget it, we just ignore it, do nothing about it. And I had to explain to him they weren't running a business in Siberia or investing in Siberia. I said football is a very high profile, but you can't just ignore these things because, A, people are saying negative things about the club. If there's no challenge to it, you can say, I told you, and then give the club a bad name over something which wasn't fair. But the problem is they're nobody. I gather they've got a communication director, or whatever that means, at Chelsea. But you never hear from them. The only person that makes statements is Mourinho. And although I think in many ways there's no doubt Mourinho is a good manager, although hasn't got a good start this year, it's still early days. But the way Chelsea play at the moment, they're just getting on with the game. There's unfortunate unsaved incidents from time to time. And Costa is a perfect example. Now, we all saw it on TV, even though the ref didn't. But immediately, FA John gave me a three-match ban. But I would have thought Mourinho, where he's kept quiet publicly and trying to sort out Costa privately. I mean, no doubt Costa's a great player, but he doesn't very good discipline. He's not very good discipline, really. And he could be an even better player. So that is a challenge to Mourinho, which I thought he should be facing up to, other than blaming everybody else. Now, the club doctor, there's no what will happen, I suspect. They'll eventually settle her on the steps of the court because they don't want the details to come out. But, again, the incident was shown so often on TV, there can be no doubt about it. The law says, the football law says, A, the referee is in charge of the game. B, he makes the decision about players being hurt or not. And some of them are feigning. And the referee knows it, tells him to get up and books them if necessary. But on this particular occasion, the referee took one look at the player and waved on the medical team. He actually waved them on twice. And the man went on the pitch before the woman. Now, Chelsea were having, for them, and a bad game. 2-2 at Stamford Bridge with Little Swansea. Already down to 10 men. Which was Chelsea's fault, not the referees. There's only 30 or 40 seconds left anyway. Then Mourinho lost his cool and blamed the woman. Not once, but repeatedly. And says she doesn't know the game. Well, maybe Mourinho doesn't know the rules, which says players must be treated, and if the referee calls on, they go on. The game stops. And that's the end of it. And this woman has been supported by just about every medical authority in the world, going up as far as FIFA. FIFA, UEFA, the FA, then you've got the British Medical Board and various other organisations and associations, 100% sympathy with them. And the only thing she'd done, which some people say was wrong, is put on her Facebook, thank you for all the support I've received. That's all. Hasn't criticised Mourinho, hasn't criticised Chelsea, said nothing. Now, of course, they've told him to come back to work. But I can understand if she feels that she's been put in such an impossible position that she can't. What more than can't work for her boss, which is Mourinho. What happens if there's another situation like that? Does she have to look at the manager and get permission to get on the pitch? No, she doesn't. Because Hippocrates oath, and the law says no, you go and tend to your patient. So I think really it's best for both parties for her to go somewhere else. It'd be just tragic that this has happened, and the board should be talking to Mourinho behind closed doors. Don't forget, this is not the first time this happened. A few years ago, Chelsea were playing Barcelona away in the European Champions League. And they weren't doing very well. Well, no, a good game. That was all nice. But Mourinho claimed that he saw the referee going into the home dressing room at half-time. That is a very serious allegation. And he's challenged, he modified it, saying somebody told him that they, somebody, had seen the referee going home dressing room. There wasn't a, UEFA investigated, wasn't a shred of truth in it. He was a good, honest Norwegian, probably being paid £1,000 plus expenses to do the game. He went back to Norway, got so much hate mail, including death threats, it upset him, and in the end, he left the game. So that's on Mourinho's CV. And the thing is, when Chelsea are successful, they are winning things, but they're turning out to be very disliked for all the wrong reasons. Well, I find that a tragedy. But there you are.
Yes, it's an interesting situation down there at Stamford Bridge at the moment. Also very interesting as well, KB, is the fact that Pele has now come out and blasted Sepp Blatter, telling he's to tell the truth about what he knows about the unfolding corruption crisis at FIFA. And he's called for a clean-up of the embattled world governing body. Nice to hear it coming from Pele, but we're not hearing too much from Sepp Blatter anymore.
No, I watched his last press conference, and I had to admire in the way he spent 35 minutes saying nothing. There's plenty of sound, but he said nothing. In view of that, I gather that Sam has consulted with other members of the station and now withdrew his offer to Blatter about the internship at Edinburgh Road. First of all, of course, Blatter being extremely rude in not acknowledging or even declining or answering Sam's kind offer. I think upon reflection, Sam believes that a man like Blatter, who's clearly unreliable, untrustworthy, and up to his eyeballs in alleged allegations of theft, corruption, and so on and so forth, well, Sam said he didn't want, he'd bought upon mature collection, reflection, he was going to withdraw the invitation because he didn't want a man with that dubious reputation being at Ellen Road 247 because he thought his attitude and behaviour could perhaps infect what at the moment a very happy, very successful, great team. And I think Sam was very wise.
He is a wise man, KB. He'll be happy that you've said that.
And the only other thought, of course, is that the way things happen, and face it, Blatter could be our cell correspondent in Zurich prison, which could be another career opportunity, but we'll have to wait and see whether he qualifies.
Let's move on to British politics, and it's been a very, very interesting week for David Cameron. He's been in a bit of a war of words with Lord Ashcroft.
Well, I can't say I know Lord Ashcroft very well, but I have had dealings with him in the past when he was involved with Watford, and also I supported his charity Crime Stoppers. I think we used to give about £10,000 a year to it. But when they announced an initiative with Thames Valley Police to try and catch or do something about speeding drivers on the M4 and the M40, I stopped contributing because I didn't think that was stopping crime per se. I was more interested in burglars, murderers, GBH and that kind of people, and I thought that's what we're after. So, but on the other hand, and notwithstanding that, he set that up and financed it for a long time. He's given a huge amount of money to charity. And when the Tories lost the last election in 1997, I think it was, the Tories were on their uppers. And Ashcroft came in immediately and settled it off, which enabled the Tory party to continue, and since then he's given at least £8 million, because that £8 million quote in the press, I suspect, more has gone in smaller contributions to different associations around the country. Now, let's face it, there is little doubt that cash runners do take place. But here was Ashcroft, he was already, they would have made him a lord anyway. Ashcroft wanted his work. And he would, of course, be a very rare, successful businessman turned politician. Which means, might be able to actually get something done. So if, and I'm going to put the word in if Cameron did promise Ashcroft a senior position, then he should honour it, should have honoured his word. Now, I'm not sympathising going on with Ashcroft. Obviously, done loads and loads of investigations. A lot of it is hearsay. So you always... anonymous hearsay. So you offer... it's like on Twitter and Rudolph, you know, when they say that kind of stuff. It's always anonymous, isn't it? Well, on the other hand, there's no doubt Cameron probably did some silly things in his youth. Stand up, anybody hadn't done some silly things in their youth. So I don't know how much relevance it is. Because, frankly, I read the first series in the Daily Mail, don't bother now. Just read the headlines and move on. So, but on the other hand, what Cameron is coming out of that, in the wider thing, platform away from Ashcroft, is he's not being a very good Prime Minister. He comes over as bland, once again, good speaker, talks a lot but doesn't say anything, and indecisive, and not making decisions, tough ones, and sticking to them, and getting on with it. So, I certainly think he's question mark out about it, particularly when he's foolish enough to say he's going to retire in 3 years anyway. Let's hope he doesn't do a blatter and change his mind. There you are. We have lots of problems facing England today. And I regret to say the people who are responsible for looking after them just showing various degrees of incompetence. But before the Labourites start chuckling, what's the alternative? The Labour Party in total bloody disarray. They don't know what to do, what to think. They don't think coherently or look at the consequences of the outcome of some of the more outlandish ideas. And even Labour are saying they'll be in the wilderness for 10 years. What else have you got? Lib Dems. Lib Dems. They said they had their annual conference last week. Bloody anyone was there? So the only one that the country has to fear is Miss Sturgeon in Scotland. Not that her ideas are any good. Can't do her maths. Had with regard to this, if you remember, the independence thing was based on the fact we've got our Scottish oil, and look how valuable it is to us. Well, now the oil has crashed in half, the oil price crashed in half. 65,000 jobs are going to be sacked, and a lot of those, I suspect, will be in Scotland, because Aberdeen is the capital of the British oil industry. They're stopping development, they're stopping research, and they're stopping exploration, which obviously is going to affect the British balance of payments. What's Mrs. Sturgeon got? Miss Sturgeon, what's she going to do? How's she going to run it? Because if they did get independence, well, in my experience, independence means just that. When there's a great surge for independence, let me tell you, when there's a great surge for independence in Africa after the war, De Gaulle got in power, and he said to all the independent countries, or those, the colonies who were struggling with it, he said, OK, good, you've got 60 days to decide whether you want independence or you want to become Father France. And if you become Father France, you'll pay French taxes and you'll obey French laws. If you're independent, you can do what you like. But you'll not get one penny from France. Independence means independence. Whereas we, of course, in England, daft enough, gave the colonies independence and subsidised them ever since. I always mind of a story on the holiday in Greece. There's a family, and my eldest son, I've been trying to think how old he was at the time, I think he might have been 10 or 11, possibly 12. And he came up to me, and he was the second child, and said, "Daddy, Catherine and I have been talking." And I was sort of sitting on the beach reading a paper. So I said, "Oh, yes," without looking up. He said, "Daddy, what we'd like..." "Oh, yeah, what do you want?" He said, "Daddy, we'd like to be independent." He said, "How do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, instead of having to... We'd like to do our own thing," and whatever the phrase was in those days, and we'd like, you know, to be independent and, you know, not having decisions made for us. I said, "Okay, fair enough, got no problems. Get on with it. I don't mind, but to me paper." Heard him running off on the beach saying, Catherine, "Daddy said it's okay, we can be independent. We can." "Oh, great, you know, celebrations all around, fireworks," he said to himself. Bit of an exaggeration, but still. About an hour later, he came back to me. There was something. I said, "Oh, well, by the way, son, what are you going to do for money?" He looked at me, a look of incomprehension and confusion on his face. He said, "What do you mean?" "Well," I said, "you're independent now. That means you're independent. What are you going to do for money? Where are you going to live?" And you saw this look go across his face. We're clearing. He said, "Well, we're not going to be independent anyway, are we?" He said, "Lesson number one, son. Lesson number one." And that's what Miss Sturgeon should think about in her more rational moments, if she had any. Scotland hasn't got many resources. There are two banks, Royal Bank of Scotland and Bank of Scotland, who I've dealt with in the past, were magnificent examples of Scottish thriftiness. But their stupid management, remember Fred Goodwin? Stupid management. When we had the economic crisis, the two Scottish banks were the biggest ones that went bust. There is the English Bank of England. They were not called the bank, they were called Bank of England, had to bail them out. So, we'll take Trident out. We're going to get rid of Trident. So Trident will probably come down to Wales, and all the repair and maintenance work for the British fleet will come down to England. So the Clyde will be a dead duck. The oil will be hard. The tax revenues on the oil will be peanuts. And the high cost of social security, which they have there. One disgrace, for example, is there's no fees for universities unless you're English. Yet when Scots come down to English universities, they have the same cases. So, interesting. But Cameron, well, Churchill he ain't, Mrs. Thatcher he ain't. So, as the old Chinese curse goes, may you live in interesting times.
Very true, KB. Do live in very interesting times. And also, we live in times as well at the moment where people can have some exquisite three-course meals and a wonderful VIP experience at Leeds United.
Yes, and it is, of course, under a Conservative administration. We have, folks, we know that we're on this competition. Darren will give you the questions. Well, they'll give you the question, of which there are three answers. If you get the right answer, your name will go in a hat, and it will be, unlike some of the Labour Party elections, clean and above board, witnessed by at least two other members of the staff, and we will draw the lucky 10 people out for a great day at Elland Road. There'll be a great three-course meal, complimentary match day programme and team sheet. You'll be in a luxury padded seating on a balcony, hostess drink service and bar facility. What's even more important, big TV screens in the suite, which means you can watch Jeff Stelling's brilliant show on Sky, see what's happening. But also you've got the early kickoff and the late kickoff, you know, the evening kickoff. So if you're going to make a good day of it, get there early and watch the first Premiership game, watch ours, 3 points we hope, and then watch the next Premiership game. It's a great day out. It's on the 3rd of October. Now Darren will give you the facts.
Thanks very much, KP. Yes, you need to, the simple one, this one, you need to go to radioyorkshire.co.uk, click on the win button, and you'll find the details there of Leeds United against Birmingham City, as KB says, on the 3rd of October, and you can win that VIP match day experience. There's three pictures of former Leeds United players, but you need to tell us which of those players played for both Leeds United and Birmingham. So which of those players played for Leeds United and Birmingham? You need to go to radioyorkshire.co.uk, click on the win page. You'll find all the details there and all the terms and conditions as well. Good luck to you on that one. Finally, KB, just means to me say thanks very much for your time this week, and we'll catch up again next week.
Thank you, Darren. Good luck.